Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for every UFC event with your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and
The Guru, back again for UFC Vegas 51, also known as UFC Fight Night 205 and UFC on ESPN Plus 63, Lemos versus Andrade, crazy strawweight fight to see maybe who's going to be the next contender, right? Fight for that belt. But before we get into that, we have a guest in the building. He is not only a combat sports writer, an analyst, and his own content creator, but guys, most importantly, let's be real. He's a fucking profitable bettor and a damn good one and an awesome freaking guy. Super active on Twitter. Liam Picks Fights. What is up, my friend? Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely, my man. Pleasure's all mine. I'm happy to be here. Happy to talk some bets with you guys. And yeah, basically, you know, it's been a good year to start off for me. I did get off on a hot run, had a couple of events that were a little up and down. You know, I always say, you got to ride the wave and you got to ride this roller coaster that is betting on MMA. And it's a pretty high variance sport. But the way I try and bet is I try and win big and I try to lose little. And I've been stumbling on that a little bit in recent weeks. But, you know, when I win, I too tend to win big. I have been, you know, on a profitable year so far, working on, I think, like 2-point-something units per event on average. So I'm very happy with the progress. And I started off this journey losing MMA bets and learned a lot at that $5 stake, have increased my bankroll substantially. And I'm just looking to learn every day and happy to come on and talk with you guys. Going to learn some more.
No, we love that. And anybody that knows us or really knows sports gambling in general, it's not about, you know, what you do this week. It's long-term. It's return of investment. It's you know, keeping that bankroll fat, right? We're not just trying to cash out week to week. Like we're trying to increase that unit size, increase that bankroll and keep this game afloat, right? We don't want to use our own money to keep our degeneracy rolling. And you know, that's pretty much the name of the game. Am I right?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's nothing better in life than playing with house money, my friend.
Absolutely. So without further ado, we're going to need, I'm just going to be straight out honest. We're going to need some house money to play with this week's card because it's like playing with dynamite. It's an exciting card. Honestly, anytime there's live fights, I'm so fucking pumped. So you don't really have to get me too excited, but I'm really excited to see what Amanda Lemos can do here, right? She seems to be on this fast track towards the title, right? TB, what do you want? Why don't you?
Yeah, I mean, your thunder. Here we go. Let's pull up the stats before we forget. And here we go, guys. We got Amanda Lemos versus Jessica Andrade. We got the line right now, Guru. It slid to minus 200 Andrade on DraftKings just or as further. I pulled it up. Just as I pulled it up on DraftKings, went from minus 190 to minus 200. And Amanda Lemos at plus 170. And this fight, you see from a physical standpoint, yeah, Amanda Lemos, she's going to have the height advantage, 3 inches. She's going to have the 3-inch reach advantage. But I mean, you know, Jessica Andrade is built like a tank and she's coming down from that 125 division. You know, I am looking forward to seeing her on the scales, but I will say she was looking a little beefed up at 125, still in great shape. You know, it just looked like she didn't have to cut as much. It was maybe working out those biceps a little more. But
I mean, we have to be somewhat concerned, right? Because you don't even necessarily think about it. And I necessarily didn't think about it when the fight was booked. She has not cut this extra 10 pounds in over 2 years. I mean, yes, she's 30 years old. She should be in her prime. It shouldn't necessarily be an issue, but she hasn't done it in 2 years. So it does pose somewhat of a concern. I guess on the flip side of that coin, you look at the Amanda Lemos. I feel like I kind of alluded to, she's been fast-tracked a little quickly, in my opinion. Had this split decision win over Angela Hill, which in my mind, you know, maybe I'm a fan. Maybe, you know, I had the bet the other way. Like, I think it really could have went the other way. I was not super impressed with Lemos. Yes, she had a fantastic first round. She kind of starts to gas out. And believe it or not, this is a main event. This is going to be 5 rounds. So while I think Lemos is certainly live to finish this fight early, as Jessica Andrade has been finished before, I'm that I think that's it. Like, I think she's going to probably gas out after seven and a half minutes. I think if Andrade can mix in some wrestling, maybe put her on her ass for a minute, have to have her fight to get up, could really be some danger for Jessica Andrade, not Jessica Andrade, could be some danger for Miss Amanda Lemos. And, you know, could be spoiling our guy Lucrative's night, who's, you know, a big, big Lemos fan. So, honestly, TB, you have anything to add before I pass off to Liam?
Listen, man, I think the one thing that stood out in your quick breakdown, I mean, Lemos is 4 years older here, where Andrade has 20 fights and Lemos has six.
Wow. I mean, I didn't even think about that.
Who's got a bigger future than ahead of them in the UFC at this point? Liam, I'm going to pass the torch off to you. What are you thinking on this one?
Yeah, I think this is actually a pretty tricky fight. You know, I think the obvious pick here is Jessica Andrade because she's been around for a long time. You know, she's really only lost to the title level fighters. And to be honest with you, Jessica Andrade has been like a money printing machine for me. Like, I have bet on her a lot of times, and I made a lot of money. You know, a lot of people had her as like a short favorite in some of these fights. The Calvillo fight comes to mind. The, you know, Chookagian fight comes to mind. And to be honest, that was not even a competitive fight at all with Cynthia Calvillo. She said before the fight, I'm going to be the first woman in MMA to stop her, and did stop her quite easily, I would add. But the difference is, you know, what is Cynthia Calvillo going to do to keep her off? You know, there's just nothing. And Caitlin Chookagian, her real skill is that she is an elite point fighter for women's MMA. So right. She'll bounce around you, score with the jab all night. Unless you really hurt her badly, which is what Jessica did. Just didn't care about her punches, walked right through them, and then hurt her to the body. So when I look at Andrade, she's got obvious skills on the feet. She's picked girls up and slammed them on their head. You know, she's fought at every weight class and been competitive. So what could you really say that's a knock on her? Well, some girls just steamroll her. That's like kind of the only time when she loses. And I do think that this is a kind of opportunity for her to get steamrolled potentially. And I do think that it's just because Lemos throws with a lot of bad intention, man. And she's really clever, you know, on the back foot, she'll throw that front kick up the middle. We talked about Angela Hill, you know, I think that finishes a lot of girls that really like rocked Angela Hill's world.
It
did a good job closing the guard there to prevent the finish. But I look at the fight, man, I think that both these ladies, super explosive, like some of the more reliable finishers in WMMA today. And you know, Lemos has a couple of these decisions in the UFC, but it tends to be when the fight goes a little bit longer and the other girl really can't do anything to hurt her, can't do anything to put her away. And to be honest with you, you know, her jiu-jitsu, it's not like it's, you know, discredited. It's not like it's poor. We've seen her put girls right to sleep. You know, she did that in the UFC, put Miranda Granger unconscious, stiff as a board, did the same thing regionally, guillotine choke, no hooks, rear naked choke in the UFC. So it's like the girl is incredibly strong. And you know, one of the things that I thought stood out on tape is that she fought a lot of girls that are bigger than her. When you look at Amanda Lemos, not in the UFC so much, but like regionally, she fought a couple girls that are now like 9-4 in LFA, this kind of deal, like, you know, decent level of competition. And she was able to beat some of them on the ground. She was able to get back up and then put them in subs. Like, she just demonstrated some core competencies back then. And I know it's against a lower level of competition, but I do look and I say, Jessica's had a ton of fights. She's been hit a ton of times. She's been in a lot of wars. And so laying the bigger chalk prices as the number starts to go out is where it gets a little less appealing to me.
Agreed.
Do I think she wins the fight? I do. Do I think she's a deserved favorite? I would agree with that.
Yeah.
But then am I willing to lay the number? Not as much. I'm actually a little bit more interested in looking towards a fight doesn't go the distance here, because I do think both these ladies have, you know, clear and obvious path to the finish. If Lemos doesn't get her out of there, one of the things my man Lucrative, speaking of, pointed out about Lemos, her power does carry. You know, she's hurting girls in that third round. She did rock Angela at one point, and I thought that the reason people came away thinking Angela won, and I thought she won when I watched the fight live, is I thought that spinning back elbow landed. Cheers to that. But I thought that spinning back elbow landed flush. You know, on replay, it landed on her shoulder and just knocked her off balance. She stood right back up and she was fine. So that, for me, I thought it had like even back out the round, but you know, I thought Hill got rocked early and then, you know,
oh, she definitely did. She got dropped.
Just knocked her off balance. So for me, I felt like the winner there was justified, though it was a very close fight and it was a big step up in competition. This represents another step up, But it's also, we've got the girl coming back down to a weight. And you have to question a little bit, just a touch, where the motivation is for somebody like Jessica Andrade. She is still young enough that she could keep doing this, but she does have, like, you know, wife, family outside of whatever she's doing. And on top of that, she's already stacked a ton of money. And she does OnlyFans and whatever else. She's gotten the title belt already. So there's just these like tiny miniature red flags on what I think is otherwise, you know, pretty clear style dynamic that she just has to survive in advance. But she's also willing to exchange. And willingness she to really exchange does. With Amanda Lemos could get you knocked out. You know, she reminds me of Weili Zhang as an opponent analog just because she throws a ton of pocket combinations. You know, for better or worse, she's going to spend herself throwing a ton of big strikes early most often. So I think if she does that here, there's a chance she gets Jessica out of there. But if she throws and then doesn't get her out of there, she's more than likely going to get finished down the stretch. And Jessica does have a high-level jiu-jitsu game of her own right. And she can normally bring that to bear when people start to get tired. She did that to Rose in both of their fights, really. And I think that's something that we've seen from her over the course of her career.
So I think, interestingly enough, I feel like the motivation is almost when Weili Zhang just ran through her, she traveled to China, tougher weight cut, you know, making that trip and everything. And then, you know, Zhang loses the title to who? To Rose Namajunas. So Andrade, I mean, in that rematch of theirs, if that fight goes five rounds instead of three, I think you're cashing the Andrade bet in that fight. Yeah. You see how bad Rose is busted up after three, and she's slowing down big time, those heavy calf kicks from Andrade. You know, Lemos, we've seen Andrade throw over 100 strikes plenty of times. I mean, she went five rounds with who else but our friend Joanna Jędrzejczyk. And then also, you see, Lemos has never thrown 100 strikes in a fight. Andrade has done it 8 times. Is the knockout the only path to victory for Amanda Lemos? I Liam, think so.
Yeah, I think so too.
I would say that the sub is somewhat viable. I know that Jessica Andrade is a very good ground player, but you know, Amanda Lemos is probably going to be able to match her physically, at least early on in the fight. You know, she is a big girl. She looks physically intimidating relative to most of her opponents, I would say. Granted, again, she has fought some smaller girls in the UFC, but even when she fought Leslie Smith in the first round, I thought it was arguable she won the first round, despite the fact that she got controlled at points and she was much smaller there. You know, when you have this fight, you know, I don't like to speculate too much. I always like to say allegedly, you know, because I don't want to get sued and all these other things, but you know, it's only alleged that Jessica Andrade has ever taken performance enhancing drugs. We have it on stone that they were taken by Amanda Lemos. And
oh wow.
She's got the dealer Waleed Ishmael with all due respect in the corner there. So I think that there's a lot of things that suggest to me, you know, that could be something to account for her power differential. You know, Jessica Andrade, for all the power we reference, her actual knockdown rate in terms of like distance strikes is like 0.3%. And granted, she's got a much larger sample size than somebody like Amanda Lemos. But Amanda Lemos is definitely outpacing that in terms of her knockdown rate, which sits at 2.8% so far in her UFC run. So she does demonstrate like a really exceptional amount of power for women's MMA. She got a knockdown in the Angela Hill fight where she didn't get the TKO finish there. But even Granger, she was busting up on the feet before she ended up submitting her in that fight. She just carries that you know, scary power. So what is interesting to me is an Andrade bet live. I think that Andrade could lose the first round here at a decent clip. You know, she's got the shorter arms. She's got to get into range. A lot of times she's like walking people down. And if you're walking down Amanda Lemos, you're going to give her opportunities to throw. You're going to give her those set pieces to throw the big body kick, the kicks upstairs. And she just has a lot of diverse offense. You know, like she throws the front kicks. She throws the round kicks. She throws a bunch of strikes off both hands. She throws elbows in the clinch. She's nasty. You know, she throws knees.
She really is. And I think what you touched on, and I think it's just the truth at the end of the day, the bet to place, even though we probably like Andrade and the over 1.5 because they're correlated, what I really do like is just betting this fight not to go the distance, right? I think you're right on that. The line is set at minus 190, right? Which is like about a 63% chance, right? And their career 70 and 76% finishers. So why, like, based on the odds right there, that they're misquoting it. So that should be a like,
and
almost
Lemos doesn't
of it.
Really go five rounds, right?
Right. So yeah. I don't think she can.
She passed over five. The problem is, it does become much less likely that people finish in rounds 4 and 5. But we have seen Jessica Andrade carry her power late, and we've seen Lemos carry her power late. So
I don't want to be that guy. We just watched Volkanovski get the fourth round finish. Like, people don't think that, and then like you get to the championship rounds, and then.
Oh,
you know,
Volk, I called round 4 finish, baby.
He's a savage, bro. Volk,
I didn't bet the round 4 because I'm an idiot, but
we didn't even bet the finish because we're idiots, but that's a whole different situation.
Okay. It happens, boys. It does happen. I saved my night with Aljamain Sterling money line, and then inside the distance on Volkanovski and the under.
I hope you enjoyed the guest spot, bud, because this was your first and last. No, I'm just kidding. I lost so much money on Jan. It is what it is.
I did not know that, or I would have.
I'm glad you said it.
It's fucking a wrap. It's a lesson.
But the truth is that we learn, because like we said, even we want, like, because I lost money on Jan the first time, so you have like such a hard stake to try to get it back. But the gambling, the learner in you has to know that even if you feel like it's the right side, even if you feel like he won, Dana White feels like he won, even if you feel like he won, like, you can't lay minus 500 on a close fight when you know it's going to be a close fight. That's bad gambling. We deserve to lose. That's deserves to be a losing ticket. So,
well, I think really what it comes down to, man, is that Aljamain Sterling, there was one known unknown that I thought people weren't taking into account, which is that he got neck surgery. So it's like, he's either going to be a shell of himself or he's going to be better than he was last time, you know, theoretically. And that was, for me, something that was like, you know, this open-ended question where that makes me want to buy into a dog when I know that the market can't answer this better than I can. And then I'm looking around at all these factors and his coaches that, by the way, were really honest about saying, like, yeah, I thought he lost the first one. And like, if he fights like that, he's not going to win, which people thought was harsh. But then Ray Longo, before the fight happened, says, you know, based on what I've seen now, based on everything Aljo told me, what I'm seeing in the gym, I have the better guy. And I thought he did. And I think that Aljo's back taking and everything, it was forgotten because he looks like shit against Jan. And I really thought that was a factor of the neck injury, and got it fixed. And I think he looked like a new man. So, you know, props to him, but he's going to have a tough road to hoe at the top of 135.
It definitely is. But
talking about some grappling.
Some tough grappling. Dude, we had the same segue. Let's go.
Exactly.
Talk about some stretchy, tough grappling. Yeah.
Clay Guida, Claudio Puelles. I know. Guru loves the Puelles pronunciation. He practiced it a lot. He did a great job last time, bringing it back this time. We got evens here, minus 110 each side. Clay Guida, Claudio Puelles. Is Guida's 10 submission losses in his career going to come back to bite him here? Is he like proficient in the leg lock game and defending those type of attacks when he's in top position? Because I think Puelles might just kind of let it happen at points here. Like, yo, Clay Guida versus Claudio Puelles, even money. The thing that's kind of catching my eye the most, Claudio Puelles by submission at plus 400. Otherwise, I don't know if I'm going to play this fight. It's just, you know, you see a couple guys that are both, you know, historically terrible from distance. Although Guida looks like a more natural boxer, his numbers are just absolutely brutal because a lot of it's just swinging at air. And then Puelles, he loves throwing body kicks and he loves playing on the mat. So it's like, you know, it looks like he's made some adjustments here in camp and, you know, you see some crisp boxing in some of the videos he's posting, but like, are you going to trust him in extended exchanges against a veteran like Clay Guida? It's like, nah, does he win on the ground here, getting top control and wearing on him? I mean, that Gritsmacher fight was a little tough at points, but
it was.
Is a Clay Guida going to defend the sub?
A little tough.
Plus 400. Little, I mean, that's where I sit.
A little tough, bro. He won the first round. Second round was about as sketchy as it could be. And that third round, dog, he was losing until he pulls off the fucking crazy sub. Like, that, it was nuts.
He loved
it. It was a knee bar. Yeah, it was a knee bar. It was insane. And at the end of the day, like, you wonder what's going to happen here. Like, Clay Guida, you watched in his last fight, he couldn't have looked any worse to start it. I forgot who the ref was. Shout out the ref, man. Keith Peterson, man. Must have been, you know, smoking on an extra cigarette, whatever. He kept it going for the old vet, Clay, who really, you know, got rocked, but never really went out. Just kept going, kept going, kept going. And bro, Leonardo Santos at a million years old, he gassed out. That was it. And Clay put the clamps on him, man. And shout out Clay for that. Then he goes to Fury Grappling and beats Billy Q. I watched that. That was super fun. To me, this fight screams a fight from last week. It screams Jordan Levitt and Ogden, Trevor Ogden. I think that was his name.
Trey
Ogden. I knew it was something with T. Trey Ogden. Difference. Yeah, right. Sorry, Trevor. You're Trevor. Trey. So you're a nice guy, bro. For real. But it screams this. Even though this is the co-main event, it screams that fight to me because it's the same like. You're super sketchy in terms of the striking, and I'm not really sure what to predict in terms of how much striking and clinching you're going to do. And then the grappling is just, they're fairly proficient and they like to do it and they're going to spend some time down there. It's just going to be dicey. And similarly, they're even money. And similarly, like, I think if you're really, really super confident, I think you're fairly degenerate. We liked Levitt last week. I feel like a lot of people love it by submission and, love it by decision and it coming through. I lean Poyas just with the younger skin, but like I said, without that first round finish, again, similarly, like I think it's a problem. Liam, what do you think, bud?
Yeah, so this is one of the fights, to be honest with you, boys. I don't have the strongest read on this fight. I've gotten a couple of these fights wrong for Clay Guida. I thought that he was going to beat Marco Madsen. I kind of thought that it was well within the margins, but, he really wasn't able to connect enough. Marco Madsen did a little bit more than him. And that's kind of my concern with backing somebody like Clay Guida. He's really not proficient at striking. He will throw. He's a willing striker, but he's not very good at it. And he kind of leaves his chin on a platter at times. So he could definitely get clocked. Puelas does weird kicks that can intercept people in range. He could just hit him with an errant knee and knock him out. Clay is a little bit on the old side. He's kind of past that age where, people just tend to start getting knocked out at a higher rate. But then you look into the stats a little bit and Clay Guida actually has a lower opponent knockdown rate than Claudio Puelas does. So that's not promising. Claudio Puelas has a much smaller sample size against worse level of opponents. I had 3 units, I think, on Chris Grootsmacher. I thought he was going to beat the shit out of him. Mostly did. And then just forgot his brain at home and got hit with the most slow motion knee bar of all time.
Yep.
But my problem is just like, this fight has banana peel written all over it. I feel like if I bet on Claudio Puelas, what's going to happen is Clay Guida is going to break him with the wrestling down the stretch. And if I bet on Clay Guida, he's getting submitted with a knee bar in the first round. So for that reason, I'm just going to let everybody else have their fun on this one and just let this one pass. I think if you got the early plus numbers on Puelas, just based on like age considerations, the fact that he's got a dangerous submission game, the fact that he's probably going to be a little more active on the feet and you'd expect some small improvements here. I do think he's training in the States for these fights as well. So a couple things to like about the Puelas side, but overall Clay Guida, you mentioned the grappling match he had at Fury. He looked phenomenal there. His pace is just a lot, for people to deal with. So if he doesn't get submitted, he's going to beat you. But the thing is like Leo Santos basically killed him. Like it was like 62 unanswered strikes. The fact that they didn't stop that fight gave me an aneurysm. Like I'm telling you, dude, talk about the Peter Yan one. Leo Santos not getting that finish cost me so much money. And not because I bet a ton, but because I stood to win so much. Like I was on the round one, the round one sub, the round one KO. Like I bet every way you could bet Leo Santos to win that fight in the early going, I had, and I thought he did, and they didn't call it. And I was like, dude, why didn't you go for the guillotine? He thought about it. He put it in, and then he was like, forget it. I'm just going to go back to punching. Punched himself out and loses instantly. Yeah. Gross.
Yeah. I ultimately, the only thing that I end up even thinking possibly is that play is plus 400 at sub. I just don't think his most likely path is decision, which they have at plus 240. I'd rather take the shot on Poyas by sub at plus 400. If I even do anything on this fight, Guru, where would you place that bet from? I know you got a normal spot you like digging in. Uh-oh.
I knew I was mic'd. I didn't hear myself. To me, this just screams live betting opportunity. I agree with Liam. It's a pass for me. I didn't bet the Levitt side last week, even though I ended up being right on it. So I'm definitely passing this side, regardless of whether I end up being right. Clay Guida's fucking pressure is a real problem. I'm ready to move on to the next fight. I'll let somebody else bet it. Because again, like I only feel some type of way to bet it because it's the co-main event. I love Clay Guida, and I honestly, Poyas is an awesome dude, but like, this is not your co-main event of anything real. but I honestly, wait, is this the next fight?
That's how UFC stats had it, baby.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so we got Macy Barber versus Montana De La Rosa. This one, I mean, it's a little weird. Macy Barber -180, Montana De La Rosa +155. I do think the right fighter is favored, in my opinion, but am I rushing to play Macy Barber at this stage at -180? So here's where I actually come back, because I was like, oh man, I need to hit Montana De La Rosa as the underdog. Like, how, you know, she's going to wrestle. So I go and I look at like Macy Barber's stats. I mean, the only person that's really been able to control her for any extended periods, I mean, one was Alexa Grasso. That was mostly clinch. And then two, we're talking Roxanne Modafferi, but we remember she tore her ACL like early in that fight, and a lot of the control came in the aftermath of that. So Macy Barber, like when she fights Miranda Maverick, Macy Barber is the one landing more takedowns. Maverick only gets like a minute of control on Macy Barber. Then you go see Maverick go out there and show, hey, when I fight someone that has zero defense, yeah, okay, she'll get a first round sub over Sabina Mazo for sure. So it's not that Maverick's not a great grappler. It's just like the physicality of Macy Barber. Now, you know, she debuted in the strawweight division, but I mean, like that wasn't going to last long. Yeah, there she is at flyweight now, and she's fully bulked out. I mean, we're all going to laugh at her coming out, you know, kind of like throwing feints at air, you know, with the little jabs. It's like worse than the Chukagian style, you know, it's because she doesn't really have a game plan behind it.
You're
but
throwing spinning heel kicks and you're like literally missing by 2 feet. That's insane.
But what's Montana De La Rosa's game plan? She's got the height advantage. Crash. She's got the reach advantage. But like she went like I was looking. It was 2 of 22 from distance against Ariane Lipsky. That's her most recent fight. And that's someone that should have been afraid of the takedowns. Lipsky landed over 70% of her strikes in that fight. So Montana De La Rosa, even for all this talk of improved stand-up, blah, 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 it's like she's still getting beat the hell up, whether it's in the clinch by Mara Buena Silva or even the fight where we said that she had, you know, better stand-up, whatever. Viviane Araújo still beat the shit out of her. So it's like Montana De La Rosa, if you're going to be relying on your wrestling here, Macy Barber is thick and strong and doesn't generally get controlled on the mat. Can Montana De La Rosa hold her up against the cage for extended periods? Probably. But yeah, if this fight ends up, you know, getting turned around, Barber lands her own takedowns, like I don't necessarily see a finish, but like, yeah, I end up coming back around to where like, okay, I'm not placing that underdog bet on De La Rosa.
I wish I had something more to add. I feel like you articulated everything I would have said. I mean, it was perfect. I started the week on Montana. I thought the dog spot was good. I kind of went through those rallying points the same way you did and kind of ended up with Macy being a little too physical, a little too tough, and Montana being a little too weak in the striking, gets hit a little too much, and just all around isn't super impressive, especially when you see that Myrna Buena Silva fight where, you know, she kind of steals that second round, which was awesome, but then she is so gassed in the third. Like the first round fence grab was just a total reprieve. Like she wasn't going to win the fight. And that's a problem, because when your bread and butter is the wrestling and you get like somebody, what you just said is so true. And Macy's just so tough. You have to hurt somebody to control them in the wrestling. You have to hurt somebody to get them in the submission, unless you're just the Wiz, unless you're just so strong. That being said, I don't think that's the scenario here. I think that, you know, Montana needs to hurt her more. And as you just said, 2 for 22 on Lipsky, she's not going to be able to do that. My cat just puked on my blanket.
All right, Liam. So while Guru brutality deals with that aspect of life, bring it to us, man. Where are we wrong?
I don't know that you're wrong necessarily. I just think, maybe we see it slightly different. You know, I look at this fight and I see Macy Barber as somebody that's, you know, long gotten public respect. I think that she is a physical girl. You know, I think she's strong. I think that she's willing to get hit and keep fighting. You know, a couple of qualities that you like in a fighter, obviously she's aggressive. You know, she'll come back from a losing first round and still have a chance to win the fight. So a lot of good things about her. But then there's also some not so good things about her. You know, I don't really know what shines about her game. Like if you were to say like, where does she win fights? It's like being stronger than people and throwing haymakers. You know, it's like that. It's not to say that that's a horrible strategy. It is the fight game after all. You're trying to hit people, trying to hurt people. And I think that she's had some success with that. But when you look at Montana De La Rosa, I think she has fought the higher level of competition by and large in the UFC. You know, a lot more established names. Miranda Maverick, somebody I think is very talented, somebody I'm high on personally, but she's really fighting some of these people at the lower end of the division. You know, Sabina Mazo is not really like a player yet in the division. She's kind of on her way out of the UFC. Whereas you got somebody like Myra Shitara, she's like a minus 400, you know, on a fight night. So it's like, she's a solid talent and she was getting, you know, in a fight there. It was a tough fight for her. With Montana De La Rosa. So she's had a lot of experience. She trains with Elevation Fight Team, pretty good team. You know, if you're going to try and improve your cardio, probably a good place to do so. Training at Elevation, going to be fighting at altitude. So, not at altitude. So you should have an advantage theoretically from training at altitude is what I meant. And then on top of that, you know, her stats actually blow me away. You know, when you look, she's had 50% of her fights so far take place in a grappling realm, and 85% of the time that they've been grappling, she's been in a control-based position. So I do think that, you know, there is a small possibility for a submission here. I think Macy Barber, you know, has shown submission defense, defensive responsibility. I don't think she's just going to get run over. You know, she is a physical force. She's probably going to be able to build back up to her feet, things like this. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Montana in around her hips against the cage, trying to sit her to her butt, trying to take her back against the fence line, trying to do that, you know, Russian style, force your hands down to the mat, throw a couple punches, kick your legs out. And, you know, it's a really effective style of fighting. And it could win you a lot of rounds. It could save you from getting hit and hurt at space. By holding on to people like that and mitigating damage. So I think that Montana De La Rosa, if she's wise, is going to bring her headgear. She's going to bring her wrestling shoes. She's going to close the distance. You know, she stays at space. She's going to get lit up here. And she's had her face busted up a number of times. But I've also seen some toughness in her. You know, I think she's only been finished twice. And she's been fighting pretty tough girls, pretty high level of competition. So I think that speaks well of her. It's been a while since she's been finished as well. So I think Montana De La Rosa has shown steady improvement. She's still only 27 years old. Think she could be a legitimate prospect in her own right. So, you know, I'm not saying these girls are either one of them are like prime for a title shot or something, but I do think that both of them are like prospects that could use some development. And I think Macy Barber needs more cage time. I think she's going to get some of that here. She could definitely win the fight. She does have some physical advantages, but I think that, you know, some of the ways she's won fights by pushing people into the fence or clinching them or just swinging heavies could get her taken down or give up a back take or give up the rear waist cinch and pushed into the fence. So I think that Montana is going to try and stick to her all night. And if she's able to do that, she's going to make it competitive and probably a little closer than the money line. Am I saying she should be favored? I don't think so. I think Macy should be a slight favorite, but I think De La Rosa is probably going to exceed you know, her current expectation.
Daz has got two units on De La Rosa, so I think we're ready to move on to the next one, right, TB?
Yeah, man. This is where we start getting into some interesting fights here. I mean, this one actually, as far as the flyweight division goes, this is going to have a big say in kind of who one of the next top contenders is. We got Muderji versus Manel Kopp. I mean, Starboy, we got Muderji, but
I'm a motherfucking Starboy.
I mean, right now the line, you got Muderji at plus 160 and Manel Kopp minus 190. The only other lines I'm getting here on DraftKings, we got an under 2.5 at plus 135 and the over 2.5 minus 165. Now, Muderji, we saw that early knockout against Malcolm Gordon. We can kind of discount that a little bit. given the career of Malcolm Gordon and what we've seen overall. Manel Kopp, you know, he's got
Don't you throw dirt on the name of Malcolm Gordon. I cashed him against Denise Bondar.
Plus this guy.
Wow.
Make no mistakes.
I got him against Francisco Figueiredo. I couldn't do it against Bondar, though.
Oh, Bondar, no.
Dude, that's a sick play right there.
That was sick. Thank you, my man.
I didn't bet, though. Plays this year that I won that had negative closing line value. That was one of them where I bet it way early. And I was thinking that, you know, I was like, oh, everybody's going to come in with me on Malcolm Gordon. And then I'm like, no, you idiot. No one believes in Malcolm Gordon. So lesson learned there.
Wow.
But I couldn't go deeper than one unit. I was like, it's Malcolm Gordon. At the end of the day, I can't go deeper than that.
So, right. You say it there. It's Malcolm Gordon. So, like, he's got the wrestling. He's got the grappling. It's just like, can he survive whatever happens on the feet before you get there? Sumo Derji, no, he cannot. He cannot get inside. It didn't happen. A few straights, and next thing you know, we're crumpling down. But then you see, as Daz is talking about here, yeah, that intro fight for Manel Kopp against Pantoja. Yeah, I cashed on Pantoja. I cashed on Matias Nicolau. And then I was like, ooh, do we do Ode Osborne? And yeah, that didn't work out so well for us. But listen, then I'm like, ooh, Zalga. So he's never been knocked out. Okay, round one knockout. There you go. Boom. How you doing? So now Manel Kopp, I mean, he's got, you know, a little bit of that, you know, a little bit of wrestling in his back pocket. He's got the black belt now, which he was awarded for getting a flying knee knockout. He got his black belt.
Makes sense.
Definitely adds up. So, you know, you see, you know, he suffered a couple submission losses on out in when he was in Ryzen, you know. Those are against some big names, and you see him survive those positions against Nicolau, against Pantoja, and you really see the strides he's made. So you think Muderji, he's got 4 submission losses on his record here. Mm-hmm. If there was ever a path for Manel Kopp, guess who's posting about putting on his wrestling shoes and getting down to work in the wrestling? Manel Kopp. I mean, do you trust it?
I want to put on my wrestling shoes. I really do. Yeah, listen, Manel Kopp, I'm a terrible singer. Manel Kopp, man, you're talking about working with Nick Sick and getting that wrestling going. You know, one of our favorite guys went to Nick Sick, working with Nick Sick, got his wrestling going and won himself a heavyweight title. So Manel Kopp, one of the most explosive, interesting strikers whenever he decides to throw. You know, especially in the flyweight division. I mean, he has fight changing power in that very little body. And Sumo Derji, who's just so fucking big for the division, also has that fair amount of power. I end up leaning towards the favorite, who I do believe is the deserved favorite, based on his experience and based on that, those leg kicks that can really do some good damage. The problem, like I did allude to with Manel Kopp, is his lack of activity. Is, you know, it's the Matias Nicolau fight in a nutshell. That's how he fights. He will make it too close when he doesn't need to. The Bobby Greens of the world, the Manel Kopps of the world, it's the Peter Yans of the world. It's tough. When you're so skilled and you're so good and you fight fights closer than you need to be based on just your whole, just based on your strategy, based on your style, it's challenging. Similar to the main event, I really liked Andrade -170. I liked Manel Kopp -170. Didn't quite pull the trigger. You know, you're looking -190 in North. So makes it a little bit more challenging for me. But I think at the end of the day, Manel Kopp probably gets it done. But again, would I be so fucking surprised to sit here next week and say, yeah, you know, Sumo Derji got it done by split decision? Like, no, I really wouldn't, because it's he plays too close. So, Liam, why don't you steer us in the right direction, bud?
Yeah, so to the extent that I can steer you in whatever direction I'm looking, you know, I'm just looking towards the underdog money here on Sumo Derji. And the reason being is, number one, I like to be an underdog better. I like to look for plus money opportunities that I think have value. And you know, Manel Kopp is a guy that I have bet on and bet against at various points in this UFC run. You know, I bet Matias Nicolau. I snuck that split decision out. And, you know, I did think that he left it in the margins, you know, and that's something that you could accuse Kopp of doing a number of times. You know, he's been getting finishes on some of these lower level guys now, You know, some unproven talents, the Ode Osbornes of the world. Zalgas, you know, has a bunch of close fights with people, but he really hasn't set himself apart by being a very dangerous finisher. His one UFC win, I believe, was over Jerome Rivera, who I don't believe had any UFC wins. So, and had like four opportunities, I want to say. So really, you know, that doesn't tell me a whole heap of a lot. And then I look at Sumer Dargan. Yeah, he's not fighting the best guys in the world, but I thought it was impressive that he was able to outpoint Zaruk Adashev on the feet. Just outworked him a little bit. Zaruk Adashev, I know he's only a 3-2 fighter, but he does have that kickboxing experience. So to go toe-to-toe with him in his preferred realm of the game, I thought was pretty impressive. And I do think that when you look at Manel Kapp here, it would be wise for him to try and wrestle, to try and grapple in this spot because he has been touched on the chin. You know, he has been hit and hurt a little bit. So far, I don't believe he's recorded a UFC knockdown against in the, you know, in the fights he's had, but he has been, you know, wobbled a little bit, stumbled. He likes to exchange and he puts himself on the line. And with somebody like Sumer Dargan, you know, he's really not the world's best fighter, but he is pretty efficient. You know, he does a lot of things pretty well. Nothing that's like overly standout. Like his power is good. It's not earth shattering, going to stop everybody, but he can put a pretty consistent pace on people. He has a really good distance differential. You know, when he's standing at distance with somebody, he's normally outlanding them by a pretty good clip so far in the UFC. And again, he's been at a lower level of competition, but Cap's had many opportunities to kind of like up the volume and hasn't really been able to do so, you know. And I've seen other people break him with pace over the course of a 3-round fight. You know, we saw Kyoji Horiguchi do that in the Bantamweight Grand Prix. And when we've seen Cap have a lot of success wrestling, oftentimes it was early in his career against lower levels of competition that he was able to get the submission game going. And then on top of that, he was wearing shoes. Like if you go back and watch the footage, when he was in Japan, at times he was wearing wrestling shoes when he was competing.
Yes, he was.
You know, we say it jokingly, but if you're not wearing them in real life, your traction's a lot different, and it's going to be a lot harder to take somebody like Sumer Dargan down, who knows that everybody's going to try and take him down in the UFC.
Yeah. You know, scouting him coming in, it was something I was actually concerned about, that, you know, he had worn wrestling shoes for the last few of his Ryzen fights. But, yeah, you like the dog. I think TB and I kind of lean towards the favorite, but are not super confident in it at the current line. Is that about accurate, TB?
Yeah. No, I mean, I'll pick Kopp to win straight up, but you won't find me placing a bet on him for this fight.
Fair enough.
And that's kind of where I'm at for a decent amount of these. Next one coming in. We don't even have a line for it yet, so I'm legitimately just going to keep it nice and short and sweet for you guys. I see why we got an E here. There's not supposed to be an E in Romanov and Alexander. Token to Russians over here. So we got Alexander Romanov versus our late notice, recently re-signed to the UFC, Chase Sherman. This is Romanov smash. Tell me otherwise.
I was going to say it's a Romanov smoking. Speaking of smoking, hello, 420. What's up? It's Romanov about to smoke the competition. Chase Sherman, man, you know, about his ducats, man. He gets another UFC contract out of this concussion he's about to get. So, I mean, that's about that. you guys talk. I'm about to do some business.
Yeah, this is not a very compelling fight, really. It was put together on short notice. Chase Sherman has kind of been exposed over the course of his career as needing performance-enhancing drugs to move in an athletic fashion. He's pretty stiff
these days.
You know, he's kind of upright in his stance, and really, I thought that Jake Collier fight was an absolute, you know, shame of a performance. Honestly, there was nothing inspiring about it. So, am I interested in laying the -1600 on Romanov? No, I will not be doing that. It's heavyweight. There's banana peels involved. You know, the guy's no prize. Really, I think Romanov looks a little bit better physically for this fight. I think he's probably going to be in a bit better cardiovascular shape. Chase Sherman is not in good cardiovascular shape by and large. So that's a good sign for him here. And Romanov just has a style that's not conducive to Chase Sherman winning the fight. You know, he's probably going to get on top of him, but he does like to throw people a little bit in the upper body. I think that, you know, against somebody like Chase Sherman, who stands upright, that should be doable. But he is a heavy guy, you know, so he's going to have to get him over. But once he tips him over once, the fight's over. You know, I thought Kali just moved through his guard like there was nothing there. So, yeah, this is kind of a nothing fight for me. One of the least interesting on the card. And the under 2.5 – or excuse me, the under 1.5 has already been bet to minus 200. So, really, there's just not very much meat on the bone.
Yeah, you make a good point.
shout out our guy Uncle Fucking Wheezy, man. I believe this is the ass shaving of the week.
It's gotta be, right? I mean, I don't want to spoil his show or anything, ruin anything, but I think we can kind of like,
I love trying to spoil his show. It's, I think it's the opposite. I love you can do the stats while I say this. Like, to me, it's like trying to guess like what his ass shaving is like. I want to guess, and then I like need to tune in to confirm if I had it or not, because honestly, like, I don't 50% of the time I don't get it. Like, he's got somebody else. I'm like, oh shit, okay, Uncle Wheezy, I see you. Shout out Uncle Wheezy. Shout out,
love our Uncle Wheezy, all the boys. I hope you guys, if you're watching now, throw a little like on the video, give a little subscribe, make sure you're subscribed to Liam Picks Fights over here. I mean we're trying to all make some money together. It's us against the bookies, right? So I hope you guys are enjoying. We took a little 420 hit on the show here. Let's get popping. Yeah. Now we're off the main card here. We're going to get the pace going for you guys a little bit, you know. And we got Lando Venata versus Charles Jourdain. I mean, this
one word here. Well, that's not one word. It's four words, one saying. Fight of the night. Fight of the night.
These guys move forward, they throw, they take punches, they got solid cardio. Neither of them is going to look to like wrestle primarily. This should be a banger. I mean, fight goes the distance. Is that, I mean, over 2.5 is +195. If you're saying fight goes the distance -150, that's actually, I think that it happens at a much higher rate than -150.
It's funny because for a banger, like, I expect to get my full fucking 15 minutes. Lando Venata is about as tough as they come. Charles Jourdain, similarly. I see this fight. Honestly, I see this fight much like the second Lando Venata Bobby Green fight. Like, I think they're just going to come forward. I don't think there's going to be too much grappling. I think they're just going to stun on each other and throw their flashy strikes and just get in there and go for a fucking war. And I almost think that favors Charles Jourdain in the craziest way, because he's like constantly favored, constantly choking, losing, gassing, whatever. I just don't know that Lando pushes him anywhere. And then when Lando starts to get hit early, I don't know that he's ever able to regain himself in any sort of dominant way. Charles Jourdain, certainly the kind of guy that could cough it back up to him. But I think if Charles Jourdain does enough damage early, you know, you saw that Andre Yule fight. If he starts to get that avalanche, his third round was his best round against Andre Yule. Like, he can start to get that snowball rolling in his favor. So I reluctantly would actually probably lay some money on the favorite here. But
I see this as an even fight. So I'm like leaning towards Venata as a plus one.
Wow.
Yeah, like, and I just think Venata has more propensity to mix up the game. He's got 10 out of 25 total takedowns in 11 fights. So at least if he, like, he's shown a lot more willingness to mix it up, you know?
Yeah, at 40%, shit.
Yeah, and he's got the wrestling background, too. I mean, he did it in high school. He's got the BJJ Brown belt. So it's not, or I'm sorry, yeah, he had one semester of Division I wrestling before dropping out of school. He's at the BMF ranch. So
Bobby Green does have better takedown defense than Charles Jourdain.
I just don't think it's like the same type of pressure or the same type of size differential that a guy like Julian Urosa had. So with Liam, we're kind of straddling the fence either direction here. Where are you dropping your stakes?
Yeah, I can easily be swayed either way at this point.
Yeah, this is, you know, a pick'em fight for a reason, right? Like, there's a compelling argument to be made for either guy. On Lando Venata's side, he's showing better form recently. He dropped down to a new weight class. Didn't seem like the durability dropped off substantially, which is always something you're looking out for. You know, it's bit me a couple times with these guys dropping down weight. So something I like to pay attention to. I think Lando looked fine. He actually looked, his durability was a little worse at 155. You know, he was getting dropped by Bobby Green in that rematch.
That's right.
People forget. They always talk about Bobby Green has no power. And I'm like, Did you watch the fights? Because I think he definitely has hurt a bunch of guys, you know, busted their face all up and all sorts of things. So I think Bobby Green sometimes gets a little too much shit. Definitely got wrecked in his last one. But back to this one here. When I look at this fight, you know, Lando Venata to me is like a guy who's going to be like, you know, one fight behind 500 or 500 in the UFC for as long as he's here. You know, he's not a bad fighter, blood and guts fighter, but really doesn't well push said. Any one advantage. You know, like he's got the one spinning knockout over John McDessie. I think he broke McDessie's jaw and McDessie called it. But otherwise, I don't think Lando Venata's ever put somebody away in the UFC that stuck around. You know, I think he beat up Anderson Silva's friend or something like that. But like, really, the guy hasn't beat a high level of competition except by grinding out these wins. You know, he's fought close with guys who are tough. Bobby Green, for example, he had the two fight series with him, both fights pretty close. And then he had the, you know, blood and guts war with Tony Ferguson on short notice. But the guy just incurs a huge amount of damage in his fights, or certainly used to a larger extent. I think he's had a couple of easier matchups. And Charles Jourdain, you know, I think he's coming into his own here. You know, he kind of had some of those performances where I'm not sure his confidence was fully there. You know, his brashness and his openness kind of got him caught a little bit. I think he's a little more mature now. I think he tries to approach it a little more serious. And, you know, he's a mean guy in there. You know, he beat up Andre Ulla, yelled in his face, blood going everywhere. That's a tough guy. And he's a really, you know, engaged individual. This is a guy who's trying to pursue big fights and big opportunities, showed up on short notice on weight to take on Ilya Topuria, a guy nobody in the division wants to fight. So for me, I look at Jourdain as this guy who's like, you know, ready to try and push his way up the division. And I look at Lando Venata as a guy who's probably not going to do that, you know, and it's possible that he does. He's just a little bit longer in the tooth. You know, I feel like he's kind of had some start stop UFC runs and he really could never build that great momentum. I think he's training with one of the Jackson offshoot gyms that's been doing a little bit better than regular Greg Jackson's gym, you know, but still, I do have some lingering question marks, whereas on the Jourdain side, you know, I do think he's been showing improvements. I thought that the plus 1,100 to win inside the distance against Ilya Topuria was a little wild, so I probably would have been getting involved there, to be honest with you, because this guy, Charles Jourdain, he throws with a lot of power. You know, he's recorded a bunch of knockdowns in the UFC, put out Duho Choi, historically a pretty durable guy, you know, put down a couple guys, you know, hurt and rocked a few guys, even that he didn't finish. People forget because he loses to Julian Arosa. He dropped Julian Arosa like 20 seconds before he gets finished. He just couldn't hold on for the cardio perspective. And Julian Arosa keeps a pretty unreal pace. You know, like most guys can't keep that pace. And if you don't knock out Arosa early, he drowns you late. You know, that's kind of what he does, but he gets knocked out early by some guys. So we don't always get to see it. I think that when I envision this fight, I see Charles Jourdain being the guy who takes over the fight as it goes on. You know, I think Bobby Green was able to do that against Lando in round three. I think that Charles Jourdain in round three is a savage. You know, this guy in round three, like, goes to another gear and throws more volume. He's gotten a finish in round three in the UFC as well. So I think that Jourdain is probably going to take over here in round three. I like his game a little bit. More than Lando Venata, but I do think it's a great fight. Both guys are great kickers, interesting kicking game. Lando, a lot more spins, a lot more insteps. He likes to like step on your toes and throw things. kind of a weird kicker, whereas Jourdain, he just is a wild man. You know, jump into range with the knee. He'll throw anything backwards. Like, he's just a wild man. I love him.
Bro, I don't want to take anything away from your past breakdowns or anything, but I think that was your best breakdown of the night. Like I think you hit on every single point, and you said all the things that I was thinking, but I wasn't articulate enough to like put into proper words. Like you said all the great things, like, yeah, Chard, he's getting better. Like it's like, it was too many awesome points. I'm on Jourdain, and I'm gonna convince him to put some units on it for Bet MMA, because I do. It's the tape shows it. Like they're giving it's Jourdain showcase. This is his fight to lose. Here's a guy that's gonna stand in front of you and give you a good fight. Now go out there and do what you do best, Jourdain. Put on a fucking show. He's your walking punching bag. Go get it. Like bat. I'm in.
I love it. I love it. I hope he comes through for the boys.
Let's go. So now this brings us on to our next fight, where honestly I'm like slightly concerned for like the advice here from the Marc-Andre Barrio like camp. I mean,
yeah,
He was just in here, what, 2 months ago, was it?
No, I think not even. Longer. No, it was longer than that, I thought.
No, it was February. Yeah, it was back in February. I mean, really? We're in fucking April, but like 2 months ago.
No, is it really that short?
Chidi and Joe Kuwani.
Is it? I just. But,
Take a little nap. Like that, it was a brutal round one, 16-second knockout. And here we are 2 months later, and Marc-Andre Barrios says, "Hey, Jordan Wright, you've never really been past like 7 minutes in a fight, maybe even less at the UFC level. What do you say, buddy? Shall we do this dance now?" It's like, so the question is, does Jordan Wright get another finish or get finished again here? Or does the Barrios normal principle of going to decision carry out here? I just can't trust the chin of Marc-Andre Barrios at the moment. I Jordan Wright is going to be the bigger dude. He throws a lot more volume. He does it all early. He's proficient in the clinch, but it's like, Jordan Wright, can we trust your chin? Well, Marc-Andre Barrios, he's got a couple knockdowns in the UFC. It's just like at 0.63%. of all the strikes that he's thrown from distance. So at the same time, it's not, you know, we've seen him go to decision four times where he's been knocked out once and he has one knockout, which was really a cardio and control and ground and pound knockout more so than like a one punch knockout power of our buddy Abu Azaitar. So at the end of the day here, I mean, Jordan Wright at +155, I see this fight closer to like, and even here, because whoever kind of is able to play out the pace that they're going to want should come away with the victory. And if it does play out for longer, I just see Jordan Wright being able to land the more impactful strikes and being able to hurt Barrios, who I mean, maybe he is fully recovered. Maybe there is a reason he's back right now. And, you know, hopefully he is okay. I really do hope so. But it's like 2 months. Jordan Wright, the bigger guy, he's got some submission wins on his record. You know, obviously it's like really tough to trust him just because he's not like the highest level. You saw him get run over by Fluffy at Contender Series. You see him get run over by Bruno Silva. And I mean, that one was back in November. So at least we got like a solid half a year from that one. But is he facing Barrios, who's going to be on the level of a Jamie Pickett or an Ike Villanueva, who we'll get to? I don't know. Barrios is like, he's lost to Jun Young Park, to Christoph Jaco, to Chidi and Joe Kuwani. Like, is Jordan Wright that guy? Like, I'm not rushing to place a bet here. I just would think, like, if I would lean anyone, it's to the dog in this
it's,
spot.
It's certainly an interesting fight where I think if you wanted to make a very long story, very short. Yeah, dog or pass. I just feel like, listen, I was on Marc-Andre Barrios over in Joe Kuwani. Obviously, I regret that. I was like, oh, he's never been knocked out. So, like, if he doesn't get knocked out, he'll probably be all right in a pick'em spot. Well, guess what? He got knocked out in 16 fucking seconds, sent to Mars. And if anybody was watching live, I was face melting for about 2 minutes because I still can't fathom that fight was only 10 weeks ago in February. Like, that feels, we scout so many fights at this point, that really must be what it is. Like, that feels so insanely long ago. Like, I'm still trying to swallow that pill. So he literally got slept in 16 seconds, not a weight cut issue, and he's back here in 10 weeks. How did you get contact in camp? How did you prepare for that? I don't even understand how this fight's happening. So it's dog or pass. I don't get it. Maybe Liam does.
I'm laying a 15 unit hammer on Mark. No, I'm kidding. I'm totally fucking with you guys.
Jeez, I'm about to like, I'll retire now.
Rogue, appreciate you big time. Definitely not. Rogue Strumba. I do appreciate the kind sentiments, my brother. You're the man. In terms of this fight, boys, yeah, it's kind of interesting to me, right? Five Dimes opened up this line here, -140, Jordan Wright, actually. And, you know, some of the early action was pushing it in the favor of Jordan Wright. So it was like -145, -155, -160. Hmm. And then it got slammoed the other way, right? So, like, then every other book opens the line. They open it something plus money. I think FanDuel opened +120 on Jordan Wright. Mm-hmm. Markets all over MAB in the spot, which I find a little interesting, right? And I think, you know, part of it's narrative based. You look at Jordan Wright, he tends to be a round one or bust fighter. You know, you just look at his record. I don't have to tell you that. You can look at his
He is round. All of his wins are round one. And that's like a few of them. It's like, that's insane. That kind of pattern is just nuts. Please don't go, please.
Well, no, I agree with you 100%. Like, you look at these fighters, and one of the red flags, you know, and it could be a good thing, it could be a bad thing, everything within context, right? But I look at somebody who only has first round finishes, and I have to start asking myself, well, is that just happenstance, or can they not finish fights that go longer? And so then you have to ask, well, have they had fights that have gone past the first round, right? Yes, he has. Those fights he's lost. So there is this red flag on the other side, which is like, let's say he survives MAB the first 5 minutes with this guy. Does he take over the fight? And I think that's where MAB says yes to a guy like Jordan Wright. You know, he says, I could definitely outpace this guy. I can outlast him. But he said the same thing about Chitty, and then he gets knocked out instantly. So I do think that MAB is kind of loose with his defense. You know, he like rushes into the pocket at times. He does things that make no sense. You know, sometimes like he'll just go like this and just throw like a downward tomahawk and like things that I'm like, why did you do that? Like just at random points gets him countered, like makes mistakes, in my opinion, makes foolish striking choices. Other times he walks guys down and beats people up, you know, and puts a pace on him and lives up to that power bar name. I do think, you know, PEDs had a lot to do with that. Frankly, the guy looked like a different, worse fighter prior to them, right? Just calling a spade. Then he wins one fight by knockout. It gets overturned, whatever. He comes back. You still get some performance benefits from taking the supplements well after you've taken them. So it's like, yeah, long-term sitting out, you know, I did a timeout, worked on my training, come back a little bit better. But I think that number one, you look at the age, he's a little bit older. That's why he needs to get back in the cage. That's why he's like, I don't care that I was knocked out 2 months ago. I need more money. I need more opportunities. I need to get this loss out of people's head and get something good back under my belt. And he could definitely win this fight, right? So that's the other reason he took it. It's a winnable fight, frankly. Like Jordan Wright, for sure. You're a lot totally of guys right. in the division can beat him. He could beat a lot of guys in the division. You know, I thought Bruno Silva, we've seen his durability. He was on wobbly legs.
Yes.
And Alex Pereira is one of the most dangerous guys in the division. He put him on wobbly legs, couldn't finish him. Thought he was kind of being a bro there. Being honest with you, I thought that Alex Pereira could have closed the door on him if he had been a jerk. But he was like, he's a nice guy. I'm going to leave him up. But when I look at these two guys, man, I think that they're going to come out swinging. I think Jordan Wright in the first round is going to be super live, man. He's more technical. I think he's going to land the harder strikes in the first round. But I do think he's a guy who is breakable. You know, and at the end of the day, this is a will game. This is a will battle. And unless you shut off the lights on Marc-Andre Barrio, the guy's got will for days. But Jordan Wright doesn't have that. You know, he's kind of like this Beverly Hills kid. He's got a bunch of cool moves. He throws spinning stuff. You know, he can choke you out if he gets your back early.
I mean,
and
to
if
his
he goes wrong, he starts to have these like moments of doubt. And he's a tough guy. His striking defense goes down the drain.
Like to his credit, I don't know if it's will based. I have no idea if it's heart based. The dude goes to sleep. He gets knocked out cold.
To show these body language problems that I'm
And then he gets hurt, and then they put him to sleep.
Even the Joaquin Buckley one was like that was an awkward knockout. He took some bad damage there, but that was just
it was? If I remember it correctly in my very limited brain, as you pull up the next fight, I'm pretty sure he was like fairly concussed in that first round already. So when they somehow got to the second, Joaquin took his time like a little bit and then put him out good.
Yeah, so, and that's the thing. Mm-hmm. Buckley was able to last to the second round. He did the same thing to Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. Drag these guys a little bit longer and you can beat him. And MAB, if he's a smart guy, is going to come out here on a bicycle and run survive. Away from him.
Yeah.
For 5 minutes and try and get this guy to chase him. Because if he could do that,
finish him in the second,
frustrated. And he does have, you know, kind of this awkward frame, awkward game. He's going to move around you a lot, and then he's going to try and pin you to the fence and just make the fight suck. And I think that Jordan Wright's the kind of guy who likes being in a fight that's fun and looks interesting and is like a highlight waiting to happen. Whereas if you put him against the fence and just start beating him up, I think he's going to have a high propensity to check out. I do, but we're going to, it's going to wait to be seen. I'm not betting it. because I do think that the chances of MAB getting clipped on the chin and put down, it's definitely still there. I just don't want to bet into it too much because outside of that last fight, the guy has shown pretty good durability in the UFC. He's fought some guys who could hit and taken the shots. So I think that this is a dangerous fight for him. I think it's probably a mistake to take it, but I do think it's a winnable fight at the end of the day. And, you know, these guys are different in their risk management. That's why they're fighters for a profession.
That's true. So, I mean, talk about risk management. You got Dwight Grant versus Sergey Kondoshko. Dwight Grant, he loves sitting on the outside, just waiting for a counter. Distance landed per minute of distance, 2.8. For every minute that this guy's at distance, he's not landing even three strikes. He's constantly waiting. He's got a couple knockdowns, you know, the 1.3%. It's pretty solid, but he's also been knocked down three times and at like double the rate than what he's dished out. So it's like, Dwight Grant, what are you really bringing to the table at this point? Because, you know, you've had two fights in the UFC that have ended by knockout, one win and one loss. And you've had four fights, two wins, two losses, go the distance. And they're both split decisions. And it's because Dwight Grant will land these, you know, these big counter shots, the power shots, and then the other guys, they're racking up volume or control on them. So then you turn the tables and you got Sergey Kondoshko, and it's like, yeah, he's definitely got a lot more volume, but it's like every time he enters the pocket, he's either throwing like a blind leg kick or like a 1-2 and dropping his hands every single time. So it's like if anyone was going to get countered coming in, it's Sergey. I you know, I really don't feel comfortable on either of these guys. I think Sergey's got a lot more experience. He's recently been at Extreme Couture. So if there's anyone that like I potentially lean towards, 31 compared to Dwight Grant, 37, it's just not something that I'm running to really. I mean, it's minus 140 Kondoshko. I'm not running to place a bet on that. He was even money or even plus money or something like that earlier in the week, and Guru was screaming at me that we needed to get something out. It's just like, dude, like, do we need to get something out on Sergey Kondoshko? So, Guru, take it away, because that's my
point. Like, that was really it. Like, Kondoshko, like, I was about to say, like, he was the first fight. Shout out our guy, Kelton. Like, I think the Kelton placed the bet early, and when Kelton moves, like, you know, I take a look. So, like, I'm like, okay, well, I'll start here. And I'm like, oh, wait, he's fighting Dwight Grant? Sorry, Dwight Grant. I hate that guy. Like, he always loses. Like I'll buy you a beer, Dwight. But like, he loses. I can't bet on this guy. And I'm like, it's minus 110. I text TB. I'm like, dog, I'm on him. I don't even know Sergey, but I'm telling you, if I get coin flip against Dwight, I don't care. I like a coin flip odds against him. He's terrible. He doesn't strike. He gets clinched up. It's sketchy always. And then he's, you know, the reasonable mind sets in, and I do some research, and I see that this guy is basically the Russian Dwight Grant, but he's also been suspended for a little bit. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm glad I didn't itch for it. But at the same time, the line tends to agree with me as Sergey has creeped to his minus 122, Dwight Grant plus 100 favorite, and then the weirdest line I've ever seen on DraftKings, Sergey at minus 140, but Dwight at minus 120.
I don't even understand.
And it's been like that for a while, like not just like a couple hours. It's been like that today at the very least. Very strange. The thing I see before we turn it over to my guy, I like the fight to go the distance. I see the over 2.5 at minus 210. I don't love that, but I do. I you know, if I could dig into grandma's couch cushions, I guess it goes the distance, but I don't know. I don't really care. I'm going to watch. I love it. I love fights. Liam, what do you think?
Yeah, man. I got to be honest with you, boys. I watch every UFC fight card. Like I have for a very long time now, many years, spent a lot of Saturday nights in front of my television. I had no idea who the hell Sergey Konda, whoever he is, was, right? Like, I was like, man, I've watched all these fight cards, and I don't know who this guy is. I can't remember him at all. Not a very memorable guy. Wasn't in many memorable fights, right? But when I went back and watched him, he's not a horrible fighter. You know, there's nothing that really stands out as like, oh, well, this guy's a world-class this, or he's an excellent that. but he's not terrible either. You know, he's not a bad fighter. He goes on the outside. He throws a lot of leg kicks. He has a decent 1-2. You know, he's got some intercepting strikes. He does something that's pretty classic Russian, that casting left hook as he's, you know, retreating, as opposed to like a normal tight left hook. It's that longer straight arm one that tends to find people at the end of range. He's done that to a number of guys, and he actually blasted, you know, his first UFC opponent in Sweden, I believe it was, home of Alexander Gustafsson. It was a Swedish guy. He hit him with a big uppercut and a left hook that sent the guy floored to his butt. So he does have some power, right? Decent, a bit of power there. Wasn't able to put the guy away, but hit him and hurt him there. Just seemed like the grappling was where he was having a hard time. And I don't expect Dwight Grant to push a grappling pace on him. He's really more of a stand-up fighter in his own right. He does have the length and the reach here, which is interesting, right? Because when you look at Sergey, he's normally the bigger guy in his fights. You know, he's a little bit long. He's a little bit tall for the division. And Dwight Grant can match him in a lot of those areas. But then I go back and look, and even in Dwight Grant fights where he has, like, really good, clear success, you know, Daniel Rodriguez, one of the better fighters he's fought, and he dropped him face first. And Daniel Rodriguez just popped back up to his feet. And Dwight Grant, like, gassed himself in, like, a minute and a half. Like, he was trying to, like, throw a bunch of, you know, volume from that takedown position against the cage, and just gassed himself instantly, like, had to let go and separate, then got hit with a left hook on the break, and he was never the same. You know, couldn't recover, couldn't get his feet back, and just got buried by Daniel Rodriguez. And Daniel's not a bad fighter. You know, he's a good fighter. He's got a lot of promise. But he was also on complete dream street and was able to knock this guy out. So I don't think that I'm going to put that past Sergey. You know, he's a much younger guy. He's been away for a while. Could have certainly made improvements. You know, does have some things working against him here. He tends to fight to decisions. These Russian characters haven't been getting too many, you know, favorable decisions their way of late, which is something to keep in mind. Dwight Grant also won a very sketchy decision. Yes, over Sekulic. What was it? A split decision against Ronaldo. I thought he clearly lost that fight. So yes, the guy is just a weird guy to score in his fights. And I think that, you know, I'm with Rogue here. I'm definitely going to be leaning towards the Sergey side here, especially at the short price. You know, he's the younger guy. I thought that Dwight Grant kind of looked past it a little bit against Ronaldo. Ronaldo's in his 40s. And he was, you know, the fresher, more spry individual, it seemed like, of the two. And that's never a good sign. Granted, no. Ronaldo's a great fighter, you know, just all due respect to the guy. But he's a little bit past the prime. Sergey has a chance here, I think, to stake his name in the division. And he's kind of had decent placement on these cards. You know, he's been like the featured prelim and things. I think the UFC doesn't think poorly of him. He's got a lot more experience even than his opponent, which impresses me given the stakes. So, yeah, I like him here as the younger guy with more experience.
Well said. Thank you so much from our Michael Chiesa lookalike. Thanks, awesome, for that breakdown, man. Just grow that beard out a little more. You're basically him. And shout out all our boys in the chat, man. Thanks so much. We really appreciate the all that comment, all the feedback, all the just the banner in general, man. It's a constant. It is a chronic conversation about these combat sports. And we're going to keep it going here with Tyson Pedro, who hasn't been back in the octagon in like a million years, like before TB even knew what MMA UFC was. And Ike Villanueva, right, who's hasn't fought in a minute, right? When was the last time he fought?
He fought back, yeah. I mean, it was in October.
Right, which is a decent amount of time for that guy.
Yeah, I mean, and active, so you look at the line. I mean, it literally just moved right in front of me. Pedro was minus 600. He's now minus 630. And Ike Villanueva is plus 450. I mean, Ike Villanueva probably should be that big of an underdog in most, you know, legitimate matchups in the UFC. I mean, his one win came in his fourth fight. Gets him a re-up. You know, he knocks out Vinicius Mojeda. That's what's going to happen if you're Vinicius Mojeda. You're just going to get knocked out if you're not wrestling enough. So, you know, Ike, he's out there. He's willing to fight. Nego Mariano definitely landed some illegal strikes on him. Shit happens. It's that's what Nego Mariano does. So that brings us here to Tyson Pedro. And it's like, whichever way Tyson Pedro wants it, you know, he could probably get it. It's like, just can you trust him as a minus 630? I don't think so. And it's like under 1.5 is minus 200. What if Pedro just like takes his time here, getting his feel back? You know, I know Villanueva likes getting those early finishes, early losses, but could we see a little over? I mean, the only fight that has gone out of the two fights in Pedro's career was his loss to Latifi and his loss to Shogun. Both went in third round and passed. So it's like that over 1.5 at plus 160, is that tasty, or is it just like Ike just going to be overwhelmed? I really don't have a real play on this fight, Guru.
I call me the craziest person. Call me the one person. I don't know why. I've just always been like a Ike Villanueva fan. I don't even know what that means or what that looks like. I haven't cashed any bets or even placed any on him. I just like he's in interesting fights. He's all his UFC fights have been finishes, right? Yeah. I don't know. He's just a stand and bang. I don't know. He seems like a family guy, a hard worker. I don't know. I just like the guy. A Tyson Pedro, man, I've seen him in this minus 500, minus 600 spot. It was his last fucking fight versus Shogun Hua. Guess what? He lost. He hasn't fought in a million years. I don't know what he's been doing. Maybe we should be doing some... Shout out Rogue Strummer, man. I don't know what he's been up to. I didn't do enough Instagram capping to figure that out. He got armbarred by OSU.
Three surgical repairs on the knee, my friend.
Jesus Christ, come out here and drop kick him in the knee, homie. Let's go. Like his last win is Sergei Safarov, who's terrible. He beat Paul Craig in the only way anybody's beat Paul Craig. Like, I'm gonna take you to the ground and actually pound you out. Like, he did it. Like, it was crazy. But I'm on Ike here. Everybody and their grandma is parlaying this fight. To me, Vegas has to cash at some point, and why not let Ike do it in 4 ounce gloves?
Wow. So,
come on, Ike, earn that contract.
Let's go. Come on, boys.
No track units.
Liam, what are you thinking?
No track units. All grandma's couch cushions for me, boys.
I understand completely. And now if we're reaching in the couch cushion, that's a fair look for this fight. Here's what I say, right? When I look at Tyson Pedro and the line against Shogun Hua, you know, that line was probably wrong, period, because it was overconfidence in the Tyson Pedro side. You know, Shogun Hua is shot, but
it's off. He's really inexperienced. He's off a loss to OSP. The line make knows is crazy.
Yeah, and here's the thing, though. What people are trying to do is they're trying to fade the shot guy. And that was probably late money that pushed that to a crazy number, probably a lot of parlay action, this kind of thing, right? So I don't think Tyson Pedro was taking a ton of straight bets at minus 450, but people were probably parlaying him up with somebody else that night. I can't remember the card too well. But either way, Tyson Pedro, I think he's got a great potential to win this fight based on his skill set. You know, he's just a better fighter than Ike Villanueva, straight out. Like, you look at Ike's skills. He mostly is a banger in the pocket, right? He likes to get in there. He likes to throw hands. He'll throw a little bit to the body, mostly headhunts, and he throws combinations. So he's not, like, useless, but I do think he gasses pretty quick, unfortunately, because he gets in, like, a pretty blood and gut style. So he, number one, takes a lot of damage. He's number two, 38 years of age. So the question is, like, how long are you able to do that for, taking a bunch of damage, standing in the pocket? And then you got somebody like Tyson Pedro, who – a lot of people talk about his submission prowess and this and that. Really what held him up in that Shogun fight was that Shogun was committed to out-wrestling him. Ike doesn't do that. So, like, Ike's probably not going to push the game plan that would give him the best chance to win. Because, like, I know Tyson Pedro has the Kimura, but that's what he was going for in all of his fights. Like, yeah. You got past that Kimura, he was shit ounce off the ground. So, like, I think now – he said, I read through his interviews because he's been away for 2 years. He said, got all my knee surgeries, feel good, been working a lot, training a lot for the last couple of years, and I've got a lot to show everybody about how much I've improved. For me, that's enough to say I'm going to pass on the dog, though I do think
enough shitting on my boy. Yeah, enough shitting on my boy, Ike. We're moving on. I can't hear it anymore. I don't want to hear it. I can't hear the Ike
slander. I'm sorry, bro.
No, I, by the way, this fandom has just started like right now. No, I do. I love this guy. I can't hear it anymore. So we're moving on. Everybody and their grandma's betting Tyson. It's fine. He probably is going to win. Whatever. I don't want to hear it. Ike, if you hear this dog, I believe
you. Under 1.5 probably covers both guys' best win condition. That's all I'd say.
That is also fair.
There you go. So here we go. We got our Richie Long. Our Richie Long versus Cameron Els. I originally like kind of just, you know, capping this fight. I was like, yeah, I think I could see like a Richie Long as like a minus 200 type of deal. And I'm like, wait, hold on. Weight class. We're moving up. We're going from flyweight his first couple
moving
fights.
Moving on. Now up. At
bantamweight. He's a solidly big dude. But Cameron Els made a real short notice appearance against Kyler Phillips to make his debut. Coming out of BMF Ranch, faced some real terrible competition on the regional scene, but Cameron Els now getting a full camp here, coming out. I mean, he lost back in October of 2020. So he's coming off a bit of a layoff here, you know, switch fighter. Yeah, I mean, he's got a decent overall striking background, just had no answers for Kyler Phillips. And Richie Long, you know, I mean, he does a decent job, you know, using his size to his advantage at 125 and now going up to 135 here. You know, he's given up a decent bit of size to Cameron Els. And I'm really concerned what's going to happen, you know, if this fight plays out from distance or, you know, is Els going to show off some of his grappling? I mean, he's got 5 knockouts, 5 submissions. So, you know, it we've seen a Richie Long, you know, kind of hurt before, you know, kind of dealing with, you know, not being able to keep up the pace. So I just don't see a Richie Long as a minus 235, that's like a healthy line for a fighter of his caliber, right? So, I think also plus 190 is where I'm leaning.
Yeah, no, so here's the thing. Like, I felt the exact same as you. I was on Ricky Lang, right? I was like, oh, you know, him as a favorite. I like that. That makes sense. Oh, but wait, we've seen this tape before where, you know, a guy has his debut and he looks terrible and the narrative on him is maybe he's not so good and he'd been off a while. He's a sleeper fighter of the card. And he comes out and he pulls it off against a guy that really shouldn't have been so heavily favored over him, right? And as you pull it up, right, okay, he's moving up to bantamweight, right? Right? But I'm pulling it up right now, bud. It's really, I think, that he came into the UFC and tried to make flyweight. You look back at his last 4 or 5 fights, they're all bantamweight fights. Mm. So he comes into the UFC, fights Jeff Molina, fights Cody Dernan at flyweight, you know, basically out of the PI. I mean, literally out of the PI, out of China. I'm not, right? He's US-based now, or is he still? No, he's still back in. Is he still fighting out of China? Where is he fighting out of right now? Yeah, thank you. Still fighting out of the. So he's still based in the PI, though. So the PI is like, you know what? Maybe the graphs say that you can make this cut, but like, let's see what you're like maybe at your natural weight class here. And they give him a guy that seems to be relatively winnable in terms of physicality. And that's what Ricky Lang seems to bring forward in spades, especially in those first couple rounds. He looked great against Jeff Molina in that first round. You know, Jeff Molina is a fucking savage. Love that guy. And then the same thing in that Cody Durden fight.
Correction. So. He went to fight ready as well. I was thinking to myself,
thank you.
I was like,
yes, I knew. That's why I said it. Thank you.
I remember him going somewhere in my head because I saw him on somebody else's. Like, I do Instagram studies on a bunch of people leading up to their fights, and the Korean Zombie was the example. He was in a bunch of his photos getting ready together with the Korean Zombie. So he was probably brought in intentionally as part of the training camp.
I didn't just dream it. I knew I saw it somewhere. But I was going to pass it off to you anyway, Liam. So tell me what you think, bud.
Dude, you're right on the money. But either way, I think that when I look at this fight, boys, I look at Richie Lang as a guy who, you know, I did try and fade this guy in the past, and I had some success. I bet on Jeff Molina against him at even money. But, man, that was a sweat. You know, I can't say that I felt great about the bet after the fact. You know, I was happy I won, but he almost knocked out Jeff Molina in that third round, like basically had him on wobbly legs. And Jeff's a tough guy. You know, he's a gritty guy. Will is no issue for this guy, right? So I think that's why he was able to stay in the fight. You know, he was on wobbly legs and found a way to continue there. I think that when I look at Richie Lang, I think that he's a guy who's got a lot of potential. You know, he's still young. He's got a ton of experience under his belt already. He's going to be a little small for this 135-pound division. But Cameron Els is kind of like a good introduction fight for him, I think. Now, Cameron Els could have some grappling upside early. He could have some striking upside early. But I think what's going to happen to him is he's going to tire out over the course of the fight. You know, it's happened to him many times. And he kind of fights at a pretty high pace. He does a bunch of high-impact maneuvers. And when he doesn't fight like that, then he doesn't have as much effect. You know, he's not as an effective fighter. I thought he tried to, you know, mix up his style a little bit, fight a little more conservatively, and it got him to the second round, but it still got him finished as well. So, you know, I did bet on Cameron Nelson that spot. I thought we might see some improvements. You know, I don't always take into account level of competition as like my number one factor to consider. I do think it's important. I don't think it's everything. And so I then looked at Cameron Nelson's record. He's really not beating anybody of substance. He's a little bit older. He's a little bit long in the tooth. You know, BMF Ranch, happy to see him get some new looks and maybe try and wrestle with these guys in the States. I think that over time that could pay dividends, but how much is it going to make an impact in one camp or two camps? It's going to be tough to say. Same thing with Fight Ready, but Fight Ready does have good supplements, allegedly. They've got good striking coaches. They've got good wrestling coaches, good grappling coaches, great minds, bunch of great training partners. So I really like a lot of what I see from Arichi Lang's perspective for this fight. But also I think that the under 2.5 is interesting, right? Because again, you look at Cameron Nelson. How does he win fights? You know, he finishes them early. How does he lose fights? He gets finished. More often than not, he's going to lose a fight or win a fight in the early going. And so instead of laying the, you know, minus 2XX, whatever it is, on Arichi Lang, you can look at the minus 160, minus 170, minus 185 on the under 2.5 rounds and maybe get a better angle, better opportunity, and give both guys a chance to win there, bet on violence. But the other thing is you got to be cognizant. It is a 135-pound fight. You know, they don't finish inside the distance every time. So it's like you got to be careful laying chalk there. But I do think that this is the kind of matchup, the kind of stylistics that favor a finish. And I think both guys carry enough power to get it done with the hands. And I think that Arichi Lang is going to have a better pace to keep up over 15 minutes. I think he could put Els away down the stretch if Els doesn't get him out of there early.
Oh, yeah. Nah, I totally dig that. And I still don't come away with anything heavy on this fight. I feel like, you know, just trying to pick my spots a little bit here. So as we move on to our next fight, I'll be completely frank. This one came together real last second. Didn't even have a chance to put in their profile data in my spreadsheet here. Preston Parsons, Evan Elder, your boy's at a loss for once. Can anybody help me?
So I got nothing here, boys. I got to research this one. Wow. I didn't even know this was announced until like 6 hours ago. And at that point, I was still cramming the rest of these fights. I'm like,
no chance.
I will dig into that one. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Liam Picks Fights. I'd be happy to give you guys my opinion.
Do it.
On that fight before fight time. I'll just tweet it out once I get the chance to research it, but I don't want to, you know, fornicate something. It's just, it'd be purely rectum derived opinion right now. I don't know these guys well enough.
So what I will say is Preston had one of the toughest debuts you could possibly have against D-Rod there. And you see somebody like Evan Elder, who had just fought recently, end of December, in FAC, which is that Missouri Missouri promotion. You know, against a guy that's 9-16, though, is the problem.
Yeah, I mean,
he looks the part. They get both guys look the part of physical specimen and prospect. But all remains to be seen. It seems like a very good Dana White contender series, LFA type of fight, but weird to see it in the UFC. But either way, I'm happy to see it.
Yeah. I mean,
I've already said too much.
Definitely seems like they're trying to get Parsons a win. Shout out Roach Strummer. Thanks for hopping in again, buddy.
Appreciate you, dog.
Hope you guys all give us a little like here.
All you guys, MMA
on our channel. I know you guys have been hanging around always. Exactly. We love you guys in the chat. Seriously. So we got a couple more fights for you guys. Hopefully we got at least one of some serious substance here. So, I mean, how much serious substance can you get into on Marcin Prochniow versus Felipe Lins? How many canceled fights in a row have we had for Felipe Lins? Does he even make it to the cage on Saturday? Do we set a line for that? what is it, six in a row that he's back out of?
That's crazy.
Or, the, you know, the fight, you know, whatever
happens. Three of them against Ben Rothwell.
Yeah, that's not happening anymore. Goodbye, Big Ben. But Marcin Prochniow, he seemed to come into his own here in the last couple fights, knocked out three first rounds in a row. Sam Alvey, But then Magomed Ankalaev, all right, all right. That's, you know, some decent competition. Then slow Mike Rodriguez. Oh, oh boy. Okay. So now we're coming into the Kalito Roundtree fight. It's like Roundtree minus 300, minus 4. You know, he's going to smash this guy. Next thing you know, I mean, you finally see the karate-based Marcin Prochniak, you know, doing his thing, picking away from distance, and Roundtree doing his, you know, the questionable Khalil, not the murderous Khalil that we saw the last couple of times. So yeah, then Prochniak, he comes out, knocks the shit out of Ike Villanueva. I mean, body kick, beautiful. He was building up to it all fight. He was winning all first round. He gets into the second, and I mean, listen, man, Marcin Prochniak. So it's like, what level fighter do we think Felipe Lins is? As Guru hates anybody that's beating Ike Villanueva, okay, his new boy. so yeah, I mean, Felipe Lins. I bet you against Andre Arlovsky, that was one of the most regrettable decisions of my life. I bet you against Tanner Boser, and it was even more regrettable as you get knocked out by Tanner Boser. But so now cutting back down to the light heavyweight division, Monstro going back to his true home, because I don't think he was really a real heavyweight. So there's so many factors here. Does he even make to the cage Saturday? Felipe Lins, how does this weight cut look now? 36 years old. He had the faster hands at heavyweight, but like Marcin Prochniak is going to be the faster fighter here probably. Lins, 4-inch reach. Can he, you know, can he get his knockdown? Can he win like he did in the PFL? I don't know, man. A plus 105 on Lins and minus 125 Prochniak. I feel like Prochniak I would be good with up to minus 150, but at the end of the day, we're talking Marcin Prochniak, and it's like, you know, I'm still remembering all three of those round one knockouts, my buddy. So, yeah. I mean, do we just take this one inside the distance, or do we fade the narrative and say fight goes to the decision? Over 1.5 at minus 145, I feel like is solid. Guru, you got a stronger feel on this one?
I lean to Ike Villanueva in this fight, guys. I feel like you guys for the last fight. I have nothing. I have no interest.
Fair Sorry. Play.
Sorry.
I mean, this is a fight where it's really hard to like stake your flag and be like, I am 100% sure that this guy's going to, because neither one of them is like a world beater. But I mean, for me, this is a pretty clear read. And the reason I say that is just because Felipe Lins has shown me not one reason to be confident in him in the UFC. Like not one.
He fleeced the PFL. What the fuck? Well, dude, I thought he was good. I thought he was a good fighter. What happened?
After you make the $1 million, there's a lot less incentive to be good at fighting.
Apparently.
You're cashing checks. And especially, I don't know what he gets to show and win.
Tell that guy to the beat. Tell that guy to beat Don Madge, though. 5 underdog spots in a row. What the fuck?
Going down to 205, I think, is interesting at least. It makes me think maybe Lins is more motivated for this opportunity, or maybe he's been like deathly ill and that's the reason he's pulled out in 19 fights in a row or whatever it is. But I don't believe in Lins. You know, I think a lot of people are tempted by this dog money on his name, and I just don't see it, man. I don't think he's very good at fighting. I don't think he's an exceptional guy. I don't think his level of motivation has been there. Am I thrilled and like running to the window to back on Marcin Prochniak? No, especially not at chalk prices, but I'm going to wait and see what happens here. I'm going to let people keep coming in on this Felipe Lins side potentially and see if there becomes an opening. You know, I think a plus money number by Marcin Prochniak's name could be interesting.
Yeah.
And I do think that he probably has the speed edge. If you just look at your stat document is a pretty good data visualization for the fact that on the feet, Felipe Lins, his stats are fucking doo-doo. So excuse my language, but he's really not performed in the UFC. And I think that this is it's a weird fight, man. I think Marcin can win the fight. He doesn't have great durability, so he could always lose a fight by getting knocked out. Sam Alvey really hasn't shown much in his recent performances, so that loss has aged poorly for Prochniak. But I do think that overall, I just think he's a little bit more competent as a fighter. So I would back him at, you know, a significant plus number, but probably just let this fight go, because really, what do I need to scream at my television for these guys? They're not very good.
Speaking of letting fights go, this Dean Barry line has gotten absolutely astronomical. You'd think it's the second coming of Jesus. I know Mike Jackson is really fairly abysmal
in terms of not only his fighting, but kind of him as a person. But like, I just don't like Dean the Karate Kid, man. Like, I just, it's super sketchy. If you take him down or you extend him, I have no confidence. So if you're telling me I have to place a bet, I'm taking Mike Jackson, because it's, the line has just become unplayable unless you guys are really, you guys got a sick, maybe hit Mike, maybe it's Dean Barry. I don't know what the fucking play is.
Maybe,
so
maybe
I,
you're discounting the second coming of Michael Jackson.
No, I'm not, that's what I said. I'm kind of like dog or pass at this point. Like everybody's parlaying Dean Barry with what's his face on top of the card, the big favorite, Tyson Pedro.
I couldn't hit my unmute button.
Don't worry, you guys are all stoned. You guys are all stoned. It's fine. No, I like Liam.
Allegedly.
No, yeah.
Allegedly.
No, I like it. Dean Barry, man, he seems fairly good, but at this price, it's untouchable, and I don't know where the props are, like the deep props are going to be. So what do you guys
think? I think fairly good is a kind descriptor by you. I do. He seems okay. You know, I say this as a proud Irishman, by the way, boys. So if I'm not singing your praises and you're from the Emerald Isle, you got something to be worried about, right? Like me and Gary, you know, I was willing.
We cashed on him twice, big time. So
big blessings. I was going to say, I had a marginal amount of skepticism against Darian Weeks. I wasn't really expecting much from Weeks. I just was thinking, you know, Gary's probably not going to justify his price. And you know, he probably did justify the price in the end of the day, but more so by Weeks doing nothing. You know, he really, like, he didn't put himself in a position to win. He just kind of followed him around all night and got jabbed up. You know, I thought that Gary looked okay there, but there is this, like, you know, level of proximal development. Like, Dean Barry's getting this fight because Mike Jackson hasn't fought him forever, because he's the older guy, and because they want to give him a win here. But I also have this, like, sneaking suspicion. Now, Mike Jackson fought like a complete idiot against CM Punk, to be perfectly fair. And I say that as somebody that can acknowledge he beat him from pillar to post. Like, he was the much better fighter than CM Punk. But he also, like, forced the fight to go 15 minutes. Like, he easily could have finished CM Punk at any point. Mm. And he, like, chose. Like,
he just
forced
didn't,
the fight
yeah.
to go 15 minutes.
That's why everybody hates him.
The thing
still,
is, man,
to this day, they still hate
him. That's an excellent poll, by the way. But I think that when I look at this, man, Mike Jackson is the kind of guy that could potentially pull an upset as a plus 750.
Yes.
Because he's fighting somebody that's not very good. Right. And Dean Barry, I watched his UAE fight. He's got some guy that you've never heard of all over his back looking for chokes for like a minute and a half before he knocks him out. And that guy was completely gassed by the time he stood back up. He pulled a Dwight Grant, had 2 minutes in the tank, got the takedown, was on all over him, and then just had nothing left and got finished instantly.
Did you see his fight coming into the UFC?
He almost got taken down by that guy who literally didn't take one
punch. He's fighting
punch.
Lipton T. The guy that before he can say go, Lipton T is running at him trying to take him down because he knows it's all he's got. Dog, he's
well,
six
fairness,
and he's 6-30. He's
that guy pulled out.
30.
He had like a legitimate booking for that fight. And by legitimate, I mean like somebody with a heartbeat and a winning record of something. And then that guy got pulled late notice. So
six
they just were like,
30.
Anybody with a warm bodies. Like they were doing one of those, like anybody in the arena that, you know, didn't have money for tickets and wanted in at the door. They're like, hey, if you fight this guy,
me, basically.
Yeah, and that's the kind of deal. But I don't hold that against him. You know, you can only fight
no,
who gets in
yeah,
the cage, hate,
for sure.
cage with you. But I also look and out. I say, has he shown me anything that he should be minus 1500 here? No, he hasn't. Like, yes, he should win this fight. He should probably be minus 500, right? Well, the reason I say that 85% of the time, you know, puncher's chance, you know, maybe let's say he should be minus 650. He should be minus 700. Like, at what point does it just become absurd and ridiculous? Like, is he really going to win this fight 95% of the time? If they ran out there, you know, 95 times out of 100, he's going to beat him. It's just like, I find that hard to believe with a guy who makes this many mistakes, who's this green, he's 3-1. You know, what's his exceptional skill? Yeah, I mean, he hits decently hard. He throws, you know, combinations well enough on the feet. But that's it. Like, he was getting taken down almost effortlessly. And I'm sure he's shorn that up just a little bit. You know, he was able to work back to his feet, but he gave his back and he like gave up a really terrible position that somebody competent could have finished. Like Mike Jackson, if he wasn't effing around, probably could have finished that joke if he was on his back like that. So I just think there's 0% chance I'm parlaying a Dean Barry. There's 0% chance I'm playing a Dean Barry prop. There's no dollars.
But bro, why don't you subscribe to my picks, bro? I got that Tyson Pedro Dean Barry parlay for you, fam. Why don't you pay for my picks? I got you.
Touching.
Hey, to each their own. Everybody's got a different style of betting. I'll say that. You know, I've known guys that lay the hammer on big favorites, things like this. Hey, to each their own. I'm not going to hold it against anybody, but that ain't the way I've made my money. You know, I find that I do better looking for these underdog shots, looking for people that I think have value on the money line, looking for props that I think I could play. And that's how I try and make my bread. And so far, so good this year.
Yeah,
a couple of tough events, but trying to get back, my brother. And I think that there's some decent underdogs with a chance this week. And I think that other than that, you know, there might be some prop opportunities. There might be some totals I look to move in on. But it should be a fun card. And if you don't like what you see here, there's plenty on Bellator. There's plenty of other action to go around. LFA, one championship, you name it. PFL. Fury FC. There's
tonight,
think of three letters, there's a card doing MMA under those three letters this weekend.
Super true. So, four letters with this past weekend. We were at CFFC 107. That was fucking incredible. Shout out everybody. That was there, man. That was one of the best times ever, man. That was legendary. Shout out to fucking Liam Picks Fights, man. Like, coming through. Doug, thank you so much for being here, man. Helping us really break down a tough card in a really, really in-depth way. We all appreciate that. And your time, 2 hours, man. Thank you so much, brother.
Dude, it was my pleasure. I had a great time, fun conversation, great way to cap off a great day. I have some bets to resolve here very shortly on the baseball diamond today. If the Mariners can close this out here, they're in the bottom of the eighth inning, I will win a little over $1,000 on closing on that. So that would be pretty glorious. That's why I'm sitting over here. If you
my
guys have seen, just peeking that little click button, because I've been half shitting my pants over here. They're up 4-0.
Our full degen.
They closed this for us.
Bro, you got to start like DMing me all your random ass picks, because I might just have to tell them shit. You're always making money. But seriously, let's let you get out of here, man, so you can watch that and win your money in peace. You can follow me at Guru Scouting MMA on Twitter, Verdict, Instagram, and Tapology. You can follow my amazing co-host at TB Scouting MMA on Twitter, Verdict, Instagram, and Tapology. Our awesome guest, thank you so much for joining us, at Liam Picks Fights. Follow him there, man. He's worth the follow. Next week, we got, is it Chito Vera? We got Chito Vera, Rob Font. Yeah, ooh, baby. Yeah, baby. And we're bringing in the dog, Lucrative MMA. So make sure you tune in next week. Make sure you tune in fucking this week, because this shit's still hot, baby. So see you the next time I see you. Deuces.